Good morning, everybody. Glad to have you all with me today, and hope you're enjoying our lovely spring weekend. I know I am, and I'm really pleased to bring you some folks this morning who have some fabulous information, really important life-saving information for some of you, but also some information to help raise some awareness of things going on right here in our Middle Tennessee area. I'm joined this morning by Dr. Keegan Smith. He's an allergy specialist with Heritage Medical Associates, and with him is Heather Duncan, who is one of the founders of the Food Allergy Committee of Tennessee, and we're going to be talking a lot about food allergies and how that affects kids and some really important proposed legislation to help get EpiPens into the schools. So welcome to both of you. Glad to have you with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I guess, Heather, let's start with you. You're a mom of a child with food allergies, and tell us a little bit about what that's like and kind of how that unfolded for you, because really you guys were some of the lucky ones who got help pretty quick.
Yes, that's right. I'm actually the mother of four children, and only my second child has food allergies. And with my first two, when I was pregnant, when they were little, I did the exact same things as far as what I ate, what I fed them. And just our second one, as he approached his first birthday, we really started to notice that he was having a lot of trouble with his face breaking out most any time he ate, and just lots of rashes and problems with itchy and things like that after he ate. And then it all kind of started coming together when one time we were on a trip and I gave him a little cheese cracker out of a thing of party mix that someone had made, and he started having trouble breathing. And so at that time I didn't think that much about it, but on that same trip I gave him a bite of some ice cream, and he once again almost quit breathing. And that's when we started to put it all together that there's a lot more going on than just a little rash here. And so right at his first birthday, we took him to the allergist, and they diagnosed him with an allergy to milk and eggs and peanuts and tree nuts. And then over the years he's also developed an allergy to soy. So we have a lot of things we avoid at our house, but we have definitely learned to live with it. He's 13 years old now, and he's healthy and happy and enjoys all the things that 13-year-old boys enjoy. And so, but it's just now just part of who we are and what we do on a daily basis.
Right, right. And of course, you know, one of the big issues that I think a lot of people are not aware of is how prevalent these allergies are. And Doctor, maybe you can talk about that a little bit. Has there been an increase in these kinds of food allergies, or are they just being diagnosed more?
Well, it's a little bit of both. There was a study published by the CDC that looked at data from 1997 to 2007 that showed an 18% increase in food allergy prevalence. In that same time, the prevalence of peanut allergy tripled. So indeed, there's more diagnosis, but there's also more disease, and there's definitely an increase in recent years of food allergy prevalence.
Any studies done showing why that is, or what's changing in our environment? As Heather said, she kind of did the same thing with, you know, her pregnancies. And so what seems to be triggering this?
Yeah, those are great questions that are a lot of active research trying to answer. And unfortunately, we don't have that answer yet. A number of things have been looked at. The kind of leading theory has to do with something called the hygiene hypothesis, that it basically talks about we live in a cleaner environment than our immune system likes. And so the immune system's used to being challenged with different infections, and without that, it finds another hobby, which is a negative thing with food allergy.
Right, right, right. So all those years that we were boiling everything and sterilizing everything.
Right. Maybe we should play in the dirt.
Yeah, well, you know, I have one kid who used to, and, you know, I kind of didn't worry about it. He was my third child, so I'm like, okay, you look okay. But yeah, you know, it is sort of catch 22 for some of us in terms of not knowing how clean to make our environments for our young children and all of that. So,
right.
Yeah, very, very confusing information out there. But as you say, good research going on. And of course, look forward to hearing more about that. I'm speaking with Dr. Keegan Smith. He's an allergy specialist with Heritage Medical Associates here in Middle Tennessee. And with him is Heather Duncan. She's the founder of the Food Allergy Committee of Tennessee. And we're talking about what can be done to kind of help make life a little safer and more comfortable for kids in the schools. Heather, talk a little bit about sort of what's been going on here, because one of the biggest issues really is the availability of EpiPens in the schools. So talk about that and why the EpiPens are so helpful and really what you guys are wanting to have happen.
Well, really what we are wanting to see happen here in Tennessee is we're wanting to see legislation passed that would require all schools to keep epinephrine auto-injectors on hand at schools in case a child had an allergic reaction at school. Most of the children that know they have food allergies do have epinephrine available for them at school. Right now, though, most of the time it has to be kept locked in a nurse's office. And uh-huh. Only the nurse has access to it, so there might not, if you were in one part of the building, you might not have access to it if it was in another part of the building. One of our main concerns, though, is there are so many children that do not even know they have food allergies yet that might have their first reaction in a school setting, and if they don't have an EPI device prescribed to them, then they might not be able to get the help they need. But if they had these in the schools, then anyone who needed one would have one available.
Right, right. And, of course, I would imagine, that would include having the teachers in the classrooms have them and classroom aides or whoever else was going to be closest to the students, correct?
Yes. If you knew they had the allergy, you would definitely want their teacher or the aide or those close around them to have access to it at all times. But if you didn't know about some students, as long as there were ones available in the nurse's office or other places in the school that people knew they could get to one quickly, that would work too.
Talk a bit about why these EpiPens are so important. I don't know that a lot of people realize they work really quickly, don't they?
Yes, Dr. Smith could probably, I might let him talk to that, but they are immediate and minutes count when facing an anaphylactic reaction.
Right. And doctor, tell us a little bit about what an anaphylactic reaction, that's a mouthful, what that actually looks like and why these EpiPens are so important.
So anaphylaxis is a very rapid reaction, the most severe allergic reaction that can involve difficulty breathing and closing off of the airway, which is what makes it the most dangerous. So seconds do indeed count, and epinephrine devices administer the dose in less than 2 seconds in most circumstances, and the medicine starts to take effect immediately. Timing is absolutely critical. This is not something you frequently have time to, go to the emergency room or even to get an ambulance there. So it's important that these devices be available for all children who have food allergy. And just to kind of touch back on what Heather was mentioning about a study published in Journal of Pediatrics in 2005 showed that up to a quarter of epinephrine administrations in schools involved individuals whose allergy was not known at the time of the reaction. So these are up to a quarter of children who need epinephrine in schools didn't know they had an allergy at the time of the reaction. And things are brought into school, of course, for parties and snacks and, of course, lunchroom. And a child develops an allergy that they didn't know about. Those seconds really matter at school.
Right. And does the EpiPen work for things other than food allergies? In other words, if a child's having an asthma attack because they've been, exerting themselves or those kinds of things?
Well, there are better choices of medicines to use for asthma exacerbations, although Epi has been used for that and is effective. But it can also be used for stinging insect anaphylaxis. Really, any cause of anaphylaxis responds to epinephrine.
Mm-hmm.
But the far and away most common cause is food allergy.
Sure, sure. And, of course, that random bee sting that a kid might get and not realize they're allergic to that.
Right,
so,
exactly.
And it sounds like from what I've read that some other states have started enacting legislation like this, and so hopefully we'll be able to get some action on this. I understand it's going to hopefully be on the agenda for the next legislative session, and we'll be watching out for that. I'm speaking with Dr. Keegan Smith. He's an allergy specialist at Heritage Medical Associates here in Middle Tennessee, and he's joined by Heather Duncan, who's the founder of the Food Allergy Community of Tennessee. And Heather, tell us a little bit about FACT. I know for parents, particularly with kids with food allergies, it's a really frightening situation and can probably be very isolating. So what are some of the things that you guys do to offer support?
Well, you're exactly right. When you first find out your child has food allergies, if you've never had an allergy yourself or known people, it's a very overwhelming feeling. And it's the main reason FACT was started was just so mainly mothers, we do have dads come as well, but mainly just so we could get together with each other and be a support to one another and bounce ideas off each other, share ideas of what works, what our child can eat, where are good restaurants to go to, where are good places to go on vacation, what are good airlines to fly on. So So mainly we started off as a sounding board with each other, just kind of in each other's homes, or we would meet out in restaurants and all. Over the years, it's become a little bit bigger, and we tend to meet now more of the public location and bring in Ginger Hyatt and Rachel Brown head up that group now, and they tend to bring in speakers to actually speak to the group on different topics, maybe such as going back to school with food allergies or the latest research being done on food allergies. So now they tend to bring in more guest speakers and find people, companies that with different products that are allergen friendly to promote at those meetings as well.
Right. And do you offer support and education for the kids as well? Because I would think at some point, for example, your son at 13 is out there in the world having to manage a lot on his own.
You're right. And in the past, we would sometimes have a summer picnic and get all the children together with us then, too, just so they could see there were other people out there with food allergies and other children just like them that like to do the same things they do. Lately, we haven't had as many activities for them, except we do have now the FAN Food Walk for Allergy here in Nashville.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You're one of the co-chairs of that, aren't you?
Yes, I am, and that is a big draw for our children. That's the main reason we do that is for the children, and they can have a great, fun day in a safe environment at the walk, and it also at the same time raises money for education and awareness. So it's a win-win situation.
Well, we look forward to hearing a lot more about that when it gets a little bit closer to the walk. What are some resources that folks can access online? I assume you guys have a website.
Yes. Well, one of the main resources you can access is FAN, the Food Allergy and Anaphylactic Network, and their website is www.foodallergy.org. And then locally with the FACT group, we do have a Facebook group that is just Food Allergy Community of Tennessee. That's a great resource to look at as well.
Wonderful. Any advice you can offer to other parents in addition to, you know, reaching out through Facebook and connecting with your group? Any advice you can offer parents who are sort of struggling through this at the beginning?
I think my main piece of advice as a parent who has dealt with this for a while is that your children will take their cues from you, and they will be as worried about this as you are or make it as big a deal as you do. And so one thing I've really tried to stress with my son is, yes, this is a scary thing. We have to be very careful about it, but it doesn't define who we are. It's just a small piece of who we are. He can still do all the fun things that other children do and participate in sports and in school activities and things. And we make adjustments where we need to, but we don't let it be such a big deal that, and it's not ever an excuse for anything. That's just part of who he is, and we work with it.
Wonderful advice. You sound like a really sensitive mom. I think your son is very lucky to have you helping him through all of this. And doctor, in terms of treatments and things like that, obviously we're dealing in this particular situation with, you know, the EpiPens, which deal with emergencies, but what's on the horizon in terms of long-term treatments and management of kids that have these allergies?
Well, the most exciting research that's being done now is looking at desensitization for this problem. So desensitization has been around for a long time for allergic diseases, mainly respiratory allergens, mm-hmm. and also stinging insect allergy. But for food allergy, we haven't really studied that until the current epidemic, if you will, kind of came down. So now there's active research at various university medical centers around the country. For instance, Duke University is studying peanut allergy desensitization and has made great strides. The most recent estimates that I've seen from those people involved, they believe that within 6 to 8 years, we hope to have treatment protocols with desensitization available for main community, not just research protocols. So that's all very exciting.
That's wonderful, wonderful news, and I'm sure offers a lot of hope for a lot of people out there that are dealing with all of this. So good news on the horizon. I've been speaking with Dr. Keegan Smith. He's an allergy specialist with Heritage Medical Associates, and Heather Duncan, founder of the Food Allergy Community of Tennessee. Check them out on Facebook, Food Allergy Community of Tennessee. And also, if you want more information, go to foodallergy.org to get some more resources on a national level. Thank you so much to both of you for joining me today, and I wish you all a lot of luck.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.